Reading from an article Kate Kohler wrote, Memories of Mother, Mother Hamilton, A Living Legacy of Divine Love. January 31st, 2011, marks the 20th anniversary of the Mahasamadhi of beloved Yogacharya Mother Hamilton, the Guru and Param Guru of many of our readers. We will be celebrating this event in a number of ways, including the publication of a second edition of Memories of Mother, the original book, a collection of writings by her direct disciples, as well as more recent devotees, was released for the 10th anniversary of her passing. The new book will include those original writings as well as a number of new ones. I have been given the wonderful task of compiling and editing these written offerings. What a joy it has been to read the memories of the devotees who knew Mother for so many years. Each is unique. They tell of how Mother taught each one individually, according to his or her nature. Some people I have known for many years, and yet this is the first time I have heard a particular story. The tale makes me pause in wonderment. It brings back the remembrance of her multifaceted personality, how she would play any part to help the devotee experience God. This time we ask devotees to focus on how they have continued to experience Mother in their lives in the years since she left the body. Devotees have written about visions of Mother, of her guiding hand of protection, her whispered advice, and her example of one who loved God above all else. Some of the most inspiring stories have been from those who didn't know Mother when she was in the body, but have learned valuable spiritual lessons through her talks and teachings and have experienced her presence in spirit through dreams, visions, her photograph, and the still small voice within. I have finished almost each written submission in tears of joy and gratitude for this wonderful guru who has influenced so many people and continues to do so today. I would like to thank all those who have taken time to write. Sometimes it is difficult to put into words experiences of the spirit as they are intimate in nature, often intangible and ethereal, and we are instructed to hold them within. But in this case, these stories need to be told. They are a tribute to our beloved Mother. They will touch and transform readers everywhere and fill them, as they have me, with Mother's infinite and magnificent presence. And I would echo those sentiments exactly. Some have said that they didn't think that writing about Mother because they didn't know her during her lifetime. But I find that there are so many hundreds and thousands of stories, many of which I know and some of which I don't, of Mother's lasting influence. It is a guru's grace that goes out. Mother said that when a spiritually realized master leaves the body, that the spiritual ambience goes out all around the world and changes the world. And truly that spirit is as present today as it ever was when she was living in a body. In fact, in some cases, she becomes more available. And this wonderful omniscient spirit that Mother is, this living embodiment of the Divine Mother, is something that we can all behold. It is something that we can all experience and is a powerful, uplifting influence in our spiritual journey. So if there are any who have not yet written, I highly encourage you to do so. Reading from Master's writing, Banish fear of death. You can begin your march toward freedom from the fear of death by coming to be attached to the duties of the body, eating, sleeping, exercising, and so on. Perform your duty to the body with joy, but with non-attachment. More and more you will realize this truth, that man is a soul who has a body. You will no longer dread parting with the fleshly garment. Attachment to the body is a self-inflicted torture brought on by ignorance. Death gives new roles to actor souls, so that they may play a new drama on the stage of life. The sage who has developed his spiritual sight knows that the cessation of earthly life gives man a new beginning in another supernal life. And from Khalil Gibran and the prophet, "Then Almitra spoke, saying, 'We would ask now of death.' He said, 'You would know the secret of death, but how shall you find it unless you seek it in the heart of life? The owl, whose night-bound eyes are blind unto the day, cannot unveil the mystery of light. If you would indeed behold the spirit of death, open your heart wide unto the body of life. For life and death are one, even as the river and the sea are one. In the depth of your hopes and desires lies your silent knowledge of the beyond. And like seeds dreaming beneath the snow, your heart dreams of spring. Trust the dreams, for in them is hidden the gates to eternity. Your fear of death is but the trembling of the shepherd when he stands before the king, whose hand is to be laid upon him in honor. Is the shepherd not joyful beneath his trembling that he shall wear the mark of the king? Yet is he not more mindful of his trembling? For what is it to die, but to stand naked in the wind and melt into the sun? And what is it to cease breathing, but to free the breath from its restless tides, that it may rise and expand and seek God unencumbered? Only when you drink from the river of silence shall you indeed sing, and when you have reached the mountain top, then you shall begin to climb, and when the earth shall claim your limbs, then you shall truly dance." It's wonderful that Gibran wrote in such a realized state. Wonderful. And from Luke 16:19-31, "There is a certain rich man which was clothed in purple and fine linen, and fared sumptuously every day. And there is a certain beggar named Lazarus, which was laid at his gate, full of sores, and desiring to be fed the crumbs which fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, the dogs came and licked his sores. And it came to pass that the beggar died, and was carried by the angels into Abraham's bosom. The rich man also died, and was buried. And in hell he lift up his eyes, being in torments, and seeth Abraham afar off, and Lazarus in his bosom. And he cried, and he said, 'Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus, that he may dip the tip of his finger in water, and cool my tongue, for I am tormented in this flame.' But Abraham said, 'Son, remember that thou in thy lifetime receivest thy good things, and likewise Lazarus evil things. But now he is comforted, and thou art tormented. And besides all this, between us and you there is a great gulf fixed, so that they which would pass from hence to you cannot, neither can they pass to us, that they would come from thence.' Then he said, 'I pray thee therefore, Father, that thou wouldest send him to my father's house, for I have five brethren, that he may testify unto them, lest they come into this place of torment.' Abraham said unto him, 'They have Moses and the prophets, let them hear.' And he said, 'Nay, Father Abraham, but if one went unto them from the dead, they will repent.' And he said of them, 'If they hear not Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded, though one rose from the dead.'" Master's Commentary. In the parable of the rich man and the beggar, Jesus alludes to the different regions, the vibratory regions of the astral world, to which the virtuous and the wicked encrusted souls are attracted after death according to their self-earned merits or demerits. The helpless beggar, a virtuous soul, though apparently forsaken by all, after death was conveyed by divine vibrations of the Holy Ghost, the angels of God, into the high astral regions, where spiritual souls are received by advanced beings and liberated prophets, Abraham's bosom. But the rich man, who lived riotously and with no effort to cultivate God consciousness, found himself in the after-death state, in the darksome vibratory region of the lower astral world, where wicked or materially desirous souls undergo the torment of restless nightmares after the oblivion of astral sleep, that is the first stage after death. In somnolent vision, the sinful man saw from afar his astral perception the land where the astral body of Lazarus roamed with great souls, and his soul cried out through his astral voice, "Father Abraham, have mercy and send Lazarus to me, that my astral presence and his finger of will, dipped in the cooling waters of wisdom, may be comfort to me, and cool my tongue of self-created wrong material vibrations that I brought here from my past wrongly lived earth life. I am tormented by the flames of my unfulfilled material desires and attachment cravings for fleshly ignorance." Abraham replied, "Son, remember that on earth you received your heart's desire for material prosperity, but being engrossed and engorged in it, you forgot God. Lazarus, though plagued with physical suffering, did not neglect to cultivate God consciousness by the inner communion of prayer and meditation. The law of cause and effect ordains that you, as you did not labor for God happiness in your earth life, you cannot claim a harvest of blessedness in the after-death state. While Lazarus is now comforted, reaping the result of his spiritual actions, the new joy of the great Comforter, the Holy Ghost, the holy vibration of God made manifest. Besides, there is a great impervious gulf of dividing vibration that separates the dark, grossly vibrating region of the slums of astral land to which you have been attracted from your celestial vibratory realm where Lazarus and I dwell. Through your own evil actions, you have chose your abode in the region where you have to live and breathe the stifling vibration of your unfulfilled desires. Only by repentance and reformation will you find your freedom from recurrent cycles of wasted living and consequent afterlife confinement in your darksome astral prison. As fish are conditioned to the gross vibration of water and cannot live in the rarefied gaseous atmosphere on dry land, so present you cannot forsake your self-chosen astral region of gross vibrations and move to the fine astral region where we live and breathe supernal vibrations of divine light and love and bliss. You are used to gross vibrations, so you have to remain in that stratum until you resolve to improve yourself and thus deserve to be promoted to more spiritual earth existence, and thence to the higher existence where you are. Astral beings of fine vibrations who live with us cannot reach you without divine permission, nor can any of you living in the lower regions come here without divine decree. It's a fascinating subject to think about what happens after the death of this body. And we read here from Master's own spiritual insight that those who live in a attached life to this body and with no thought of spiritual vibration, there's no reason to think that once they leave this body that there is a significant change in their own likes and dislikes. It is not really so much that somebody is sentenced to hell. It's rather somebody is more comfortable in hell than they are in heaven. And you ask, well, how can this be when you know that heaven exists and that you see that people are living a better life in heaven and having a better time of it? But we don't have to look so far as we look right around us and see the choices that people make. People realize that if they drink too much alcohol, they wake up with a hangover. And yet, how many people, after drinking for many years, will do just that? And they'll face the consequences, and they'll swear it off that they'll never do that again. But suddenly, another occasion comes along, and they'll do exactly the same thing again. They're sentencing themselves to a hellish kind of existence right here on Earth. It's the kind of vibrations that we cultivate that establish us in an afterlife. If we seek out beauty, if we seek out the lovely aspects of life, and we are attuned to the higher spiritual vibration, we will naturally be drawn to that when we go up into heaven or the afterlife after leaving this body. However, if we have no attraction to the higher vibration of somebody wants to go to the taverns or to the opium dens or to other places of low vibration, when they leave this body, those desire natures are still intact. And so they take them to the corresponding places within the astral regions. And there people can work out their negative vibrational karma just even as they were here on Earth. Now, it is true that when we leave this body, we have a moment of reflection. And we look back over this life, and we are then in the presence of the divine light. And the divine light will instruct us on the things that we did well and the things that we did not, if we have not fully awakened to that divine light already existing inside of us. And so in this way, a good soul is instructed and shown what is the positive and the negative that they did in this life, and no one can escape this. But somebody who has cultivated a very negative lifetime here does not even get that example. They don't get exposed to that because they simply go into a state of deep sleep. And when they come out of that state of deep sleep, if they do in between lifetimes, then they are swimming in these negative vibrations because that's the very thing that they attracted to themselves. If somebody is paranoid about other people taking things from them or wanting to do them harm, and so they go out and they abuse other people first, because a good defense is a good offense, then they'll go into an astral region where that kind of warfare is played out on the vibrational plane. So there's no magic answers in dying. Dying has no virtue in and of itself. It's how we live life, as Gibran said, that we can really look into the secret of death. When you live your life well, when you live it according to the highest light that you know, when you strive to become all that God created you to be, then you naturally take those tendencies with you into the higher astral regions. If you are mixed, then you will go into a mixed region. And if you are mostly exclusively drawn to the lower vibrations, you will be taken to that place, or you will go into a state of deep slumber until a physical body and situation that corresponds with your vibrations once again makes itself available. And then you will be drawn back into a body to work out that evil karma again and again and again, until you finally come to realize that you are responsible for your own life. No matter how much you would like to blame the rest of the world, the people who raised you, the family that you grew up in, the world that you live in, and the evil conditions of the world, ultimately you must take responsibility for your own life. And you must begin to change it because you want to change it, because you see the wisdom in changing it. And if you do not, then you will always be recreating the very conditions that you hate about this life. It's a strange thing that we can form an attachment to the things that we dislike, even the things that we hate. In fact, hate is a very strong form of attachment. You hate a particular situation or some individual becomes the personification of your hate. And you become very attached to that individual. You become very attached to that situation. And you will keep drawing yourself back to that situation again and again until you realize that you yourself have forged the bonds that keep you always in orbit of the object of hate and dislike and repulsion. It is a great thing to enter into gaining your own spiritual freedom. Truly enter into a spiritual path. But it is a long journey for most of us. Why? Not because truly it is a long journey. God is always dwelling inside of you. But because the mind is so slow to trust, to have faith, and to fully accept the divine consciousness that is already dwelling within you. To accept it is to begin to see the possibilities, to really begin to know that there is something much greater in your life. I know that when I was in my late teens and I first started more consciously on this path, and I knew that there was something greater, there had to be, because I was living in a hellish existence at the time, a terrific spiritual pain that I couldn't get out of. And nothing in this world, as I looked around and observed the people and different situations, nothing promised any relief from that spiritual pain that I felt myself to be in. I knew that there had to be something else, but I didn't know what it was. I had no name for it. And finding a name for something is an extremely powerful thing to do. The mind tends to think in terms of subject-object. And it's a great thing when you can find the true name for something. Now, in the beginning, I didn't like the name God. I didn't like that word. Somebody were talking about God or Jesus Christ, I was pretty much looking for the nearest exit. How do I get out of here? But when I met Mother, it was different somehow. She used the word God. She used the word Christ consciousness. I didn't understand all that she was saying, but I recognized that how she was saying it was different than how I had heard it in the past. And it intrigued me. I wanted to know more. Some people become so polarized to the name God that they don't want to hear anything about it. And some people will say to me, well, I like all the things that you teach, but I just don't like that you use this word God. It turns me off. I say, well, I'm out to reclaim the name God. It's the most powerful word in the English language. And to abandon it to people who misuse and abuse that word is not the right thing. Think of all the poetry. Think of all the scriptures, all the works of art, everything that has been dedicated to God. It doesn't make any sense to abandon that. The fact that people have misused and abused the word does not mean it should stand. We should learn, first of all, what the true meaning of the word God is. And the problem, of course, is you can't just convey it through some kind of literal definition. You have to have some God experience that you recognize as something truly higher, truly transformational in your life, and then begin to understand that this is the inner meaning. This is the real meaning of the word God. And then the word God can take on brand new definitions for you. The horizons begin to open up. You don't associate it just with the things that have been done wrong in the name of religion, in the name of God. I one time thought how great it was for Jesus to come into this world with so much foreknowledge as he had, to know that ultimately his name would be used for the commitment of some of the greatest sins the world's ever seen, to launch wars for selfish purposes. He knew that that had to happen if his name were to rise up into the world, because it's the nature of this world. And yet he knew also that because of the power of spiritual consciousness that he brought into this world, and it is tremendous what he brought, that vibration, that power would go out and it would work to transform lives and to awaken humanity. And so he was willing to humbly lay down his life, knowing that the greater good would be served, and yet also knowing that great evil may be done in his name. Can you think of yourself and having to do such a thing, and having you reviled, and having you have your name misused and abused, and still having confidence that the spiritual consciousness within you, that vibration, that you know what you know. You know the purity. You know the truth that you speak. You know what's going out from you, and you're willing to serve God in whatever way he would choose to have you serve. Such total and complete surrender is the secret to transformational life. Jesus chose that surrender by coming into a body. This time of year, we celebrate the anniversary of his birth, whether he was born this time of year or not. It is symbolically a wonderful time of year because it is the transition from going into the dark, and now we begin to look at going into the light in terms of the solar cycle in this northern hemisphere. And the days begin to get longer, and light becomes more pronounced, and we come out of that darkness into the light. And so it is a wonderful time for birth, for looking with optimism. It's a wonderful time to decorate our houses with lights and have it as a festival of lights during the darkest time. Because within that dark comes the birth, and from that birth comes a regeneration, a new life. Every day, really, is a new birth for us. When we wake up in the morning, we are born brand new to this world. Can you imagine coming into this life with that kind of attitude? It's a brand new day. This day is a page unwritten. And it just depends on our willingness of how and what kind of words will be written down on that blank page. Can we carry into the day our total and complete God consciousness? You know, habit is a wonderful thing in many ways. If every time you got into an automobile and you had to learn to drive all over again every time, it'd be a horrible thing. You'd never be able to do it. But now, after much practice, you start the car and you get in and you can drive someplace and barely be aware that you've been doing anything, because your body memory takes over. And so habit and body memory are tremendously powerful things when they are used for something that is good. However, it is not discriminative between good habit and bad habit. Habit is just that, just a habit. And so we have developed negative habits, habits of thought, habits of speech, habits of action. And as a result of that, we cultivated some things that do not serve us well. And those habits take our lives over. One of those is habit of thought. We're used to, and we have the right and privilege to the privacy of our own thoughts. But when you hear truth, when you study the great scriptures, when you feel uplifted in God, and then you go out and you just simply throw it away, because you revert to your old habit of thinking without hardly any consideration for what you have just taken in. The words go out, the thoughts return back to old patterns, and you lose that divine vibration, that divine essence that you had been cultivating within yourself. If you think about the kinds of foods and the kinds of drinks that you like, the kinds of entertainment that you like, and you cultivate a certain palate, you cultivate a liking for certain kinds of food and drink, and you refine that you learn to smell with greater precision. And you learn to taste things and to really appreciate them, perhaps not only just the smell and the taste of things, but the vibration of things as well. You learn to absorb those. You learn to take them in. You can see how refined you can become in your discrimination of vibration. If you turn your mind to God and you think about becoming a connoisseur of God vibration, of God peace, God bliss, God love, and that you value it, more than anything in this world, and you cultivate those things that you are given, you'd learn an appreciation, a deep appreciation for it. You let your mind meditate and dwell upon those things that are spiritually uplifting to you. Then you will really begin to put your feet upon the path as that begins to take you over. As I mentioned before, when you have a book that's a page turner, and you really want to get to the next page, and the author is an expert in leaving you at the end of the chapter, and you can't just resist starting the next chapter because they've enticed you into it. You just have to know what's going to come next. Can you imagine in your God life that you have that kind of anticipation, that kind of keen appreciation for what's coming next? What's God going to give to me? What vibration, what realized thought, what spiritual experience is going to lift me up and transform me? And so you have your mind tuned towards that. When you enter into your meditation and you sit on your meditation blanket, what's open to me? There's a wide universe of experience that is available to me. Can I open myself to it? Do I have that kind of hunger for being fed spiritually as I do for a fine meal or for watching a television program or a film? Do I have that kind of anticipation and that kind of desire for it, you see? That's the kind of thing that will really get you someplace in your spiritual life. And you begin to look for it not just in your meditation time, but all through your day. It's a real trick to be able to look for God even while you're speaking to another person, while you're driving, while you're doing other kinds of activities, that there is a part of your mind that is like an antenna that is always tuned towards God. It is said that we should give 10% of what we make to God. But if you take 10% of your attention and your life force every day, each moment, and you put that towards God. There are so many activities and things that we do in life that don't require our full attention. And so there is a part of you that is always sensing and opening yourself towards that God experience, towards that God vibration, being a connoisseur for what God's feeding to you. And I will tell you the truth. God is constantly flowing to you. God is constantly feeding you. Only we don't recognize it. We don't open ourselves to it. We don't have that hunger for it in the way that will open us to a constant experience, a constant God experience. We put other people first. We put other things first. We put our worries first, and our anxieties, and our angers, and our worldly ambitions. Everything comes first. These are false idols that are put up on the altar and worshipped by the mind because it puts it first and not God. And God comes, if he comes at all, as a distant second or third or fourth down our list. This will not get us the results. This will not get us the birth of the Christ consciousness within us. It is only when we turn ourselves over 100% with every part of us willing to do whatever God requires us to do. This will bring us into the new birth. Now, birth and death are so much intertwined. And it's interesting because with this last new moon, it seems that it's been a time of transition. And we've had some different deaths. Our dear devotee, Karen Haig, her husband was just killed. Those of you who know her from Sunnyside, now Arizona, but her husband was up in an ultralight and it crashed and he was killed instantly in the crash. And that just happened the other day. Diamata, who has been the president of SRF, just left the body on the 30th. And there have been others. And so it's been an interesting time of it. But every one of us, I love the when Celia, Adam's daughter, she always comes to me with a question, a God question. And the one time that she came, and in all seriousness, she said, "Do we have an expiry date?" I'd not even heard of an expiry date before that, but I knew what she meant. And so I said, "Well, your body does, but you don't." And she's a wonderful spiritual soul, and she knew what I was talking about. And that seemed to answer her well enough. We all have an expiry date. We're renting here on earth. We're not buyers. And we get seduced into the commonplace. We get seduced that one day looks a little bit like the other to the human mind. We can become quite dulled to the fact that this is a constant, ongoing miracle. All of life is. Your life is. You know, when you go through a period of depression and feeling down, life feels like anything but a miracle. It feels like hell, and like you'll never escape it, and nothing will ever change. And it's a terrible place to be in. It's really tough. But everything that happens in our life is there for a reason. It's there to awaken us to divine consciousness. There are things that happen in our life that shakes us in our clinging to the earth and things of the earth. It begins to divorce us from the body, and it can put us into quite a state. It is natural when somebody close to us to feel the intense grief of loss, even if you know through your own experience or through your deep belief that that individual goes on into their own life, a new life, a life beyond this body, but you can still feel the loss. And it is all right. It is a thing to do. It is something to allow to pass through you. You don't have to drown in it. You don't have to dwell on it. You can let it pass through you, but the feelings will come because we have a certain attachment when we live on this earth. But the quicker we can let it go and let it pass through, the sooner we can be freed. So many people try to push grief away. Some families never talk about it. Some never acknowledge it. It's almost as if you don't name it, then it won't really happen. And others get consumed with it, and it becomes a dominant theme within that family. To free ourselves, really, is to allow those feelings to pass through us, not to attach any great significance to them, other than it is the passing of an individual that we will no longer interact with in quite the same way. And to let those feelings move through, and when they do, then it frees us and we feel the peace that comes afterwards. And if you cultivate it, and as you grow spiritually, you can sense individuals who are no longer in the body within your heart center. Your heart center is like a receiver of a radio. And the radio is received right in the heart center. The transmitter is at the ajna center. And so in our prayers and in our projections out to God, we transmit out through the ajna. But when you look into the heart and open your heart, you can sense the vibrations of anyone who is living, as we like to say it here, or not living. The truth is, they either have a body or they don't have a body. And when you focus in on your heart center, you can focus in on some individual, and you can receive something about them or by them. And through this, you can come to know that death is no final barrier, that you can know that individual, that they still exist. And in most cases, unless they've led a very bad life, they're in a better place. They're in a place that is a relief from body and body suffering. You know, this world is really quite a place. It's a boot camp, really, of the spiritual plane. It's tough. It's like the tough drill sergeant that's yelling in your face and making demands of you and pushing you and pushing you. And if we get focused on this world alone, it can make us feel so isolated and so alone. But it doesn't need to be that way. We have the spiritual comforter always within us. And when anybody opens themselves to that spiritual comforter, that comforter comes in, and we feel that peace, we feel that comfort. It's the great promise. Jesus said that those who grieve shall be comforted. Blessed are they. Blessed are they. So we don't need to close our heart down. It's just simply that you let things pass on through. And you learn to focus on that elixir of spiritual vibration that is constantly within you and flowing around you. This past week, I have spent much time so inwardly drawn. And God has taken me up into the higher causal planes. And for one thing, there's a wonderful soul coming that's coming from these higher causal planes. But the beauty and the expanse of those high causal planes, the freedom that individuals can have there is tremendous. And yet, it's not the entire realization has not yet come if you are still confined to that. It is beautiful beyond compare, vastly more beautiful than the astral planes, and the higher astral planes are extremely beautiful, extremely pleasing. But these are still limiting vibrations, you see. It is only when you free yourself from all limiting vibrations and you go into the pure expanse of God consciousness that you get the total and complete freedom that your soul has really yearned for. And having established yourself in that highest divine consciousness, then you are free to experience any level of vibration. Only now you won't get bound by the lower vibrations. You will recognize them for what they are. But you will always be able to recognize the truth. And to be able to find the true name for things helps to release you from the truth. That's one of the virtues of coming into higher consciousness of God. You find the true name for things. And when you do, it releases you from those vibrations that are limiting. So these are great things that we have capacity for. We're entering into this time of year where we celebrate the birth of Christ. Now, the birth of Christ consciousness happens right inside of you. And it has been my experience for many years that coming into this period is a great period of intensity and intense spiritual vibrations. If you open yourself up, you can be lifted up through those vibrations. Sometimes it may be difficult. But you open yourself and allow those intense vibrations to lift you up into the Christ plane of consciousness. Open yourself to the birth of that consciousness within you. and feel those vibrations transforming every part of you. This is really honoring and observing the birth of the Christ and the day of the birth of the Christ. It's fine to have the social aspects to it and all the other kinds of things. By and large, most of them are positive and good. But really, at the core, at the essence, we should take that time away each day in the silence of our own soul, where we honor that birth of the Christ right within us. We seek to attune and align ourselves with that Christ consciousness. We allow ourselves to sail out through the ajna into the plane of light that is ever expanding. We allow our consciousness to go out the top of the head of the Sahasrara and allow it to go out into all space and experience omniscience and omnipresence. These are wonderful capacities within the human self, something to be nurtured, something to be cultivated. Now, you cannot create it on your own, but grace comes in through your openness and your willingness. And grace has the power to transform you and lift you up into these high planes of consciousness. They are not far from you. Do not be deceived. That is a lie. It is just dwelling just beneath your thought and ready to be released if you will allow it. So let us honor this season and allow ourselves to become freed beings, jiva mukta, freed soul while living. And you will learn to appreciate the vast vibrational display that God has. It's like a symphony that's constantly playing, and it takes you high up, and then it is very quiet and very subtle, and it moves you round and around, and it's a constantly bedazzling display of God's spiritual prowess. It's wonderful. It's intriguing. It's interesting. It's captivating. It's everything that your heart has desired. Only your heart has been directed by your brain outwardly. Let your heart become receptive and lift it up as on wings of eagles until you achieve that highest birth into Christ consciousness. So let us banish the fear of death and learn to truly live. If you'll pray with me. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet and surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection surging in every cell of my body, my mind and my intelligence are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. Peace. Bliss. Amen.